You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Rodgers.
This is Aaron Zommers, Todd's producer. Thanks for joining us this weekend for the best of the Todd Alba Show. As always, if you want to hear any of this week's shows, you can head to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere you get your podcasts and take a look at what we talked about this week. If you take a look through this week's podcasts, you'll find discussions about the Joint Finance Committee's stalemate over our state's budget, Wisconsin's massively declined childhood vaccination rate, a story about a guy who ran a marathon in a roundabout, an explanation of what name, image, and likeness deals look like in high school, and a lot more. We're going to kick things off today with a conversation from Thursday's show with Emily Mills, a local journalist in the Madison area, who is currently working with Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, also Civic Media's political editor. They wrote a pretty interesting article about AI and how the dangers we imagine AI poses may not be the reality, and there are a lot of ways it's already hurting us right now. If you want to read this article, you can head on over to www.therecombobulationarea.news, or you could just Google the Recombobulation Area and you should be able to find it. You can also read more of Emily's work at their own blog, Grist from the Mills, which is located at grist-from-the-mills.ghost.io. Bit of a difficult one, but you can also just Google Grist from the Mills and you should be able to find it. Anyway, take a listen to Todd's discussion with Emily Mills about the impacts AI is already having on Wisconsin's environment.
The show is going to get absolutely much better right now because, speaking of wildfires and the environment, is there a connection between that and artificial intelligence, i.e. AI, here to in studio? And we are very pleased to have them here with us today, Emily Mills of the fantastic Recombobulation Area, Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Dan Schaefer, of course, is responsible for putting all that together. You can find Emily's work and others at www.therecombobulationarea.news. You have to use the www, so that's very, very important. Emily, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate you.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's good to be here.
It is an absolute pleasure. We always love it when people take the time to stop by here. Tell folks a little bit about yourself. You're an independent writer and journalist right now.
That is correct, and I have been for, oh gosh, many, many years. But I have a newsletter called Grist from the Mills, which is on the Ghost platform, a little different than Substack. Mm-hmm. That I've been writing for some time, and Dan was kind enough to give me a spot as a regular columnist on the Recombobulation Area. We've known each other professionally for quite some years, but I used to have an opinion column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I was their token leftist, among other things. I got some pretty fabulous feedback on that.
I'm the token centrist here.
So yeah, we've all got our
Republican
token roles to play. And I used to be the editor of Our Lives, which is the still sole remaining LGBTQ media outlet in Wisconsin. So,
fantastic.
But yeah, I've been here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We always love when journalists, because I'm a big fan of coming up in independent radio out in Southwest Wisconsin. I'm a huge fan of journalists who are not part of the corporate America. I've voiced frustration on this program before because I think there are intimidation factors going on in the current administration, but that's not why you're here. The point is, as an independent journalist, you can suss these things out, and with platforms like the Recombobulation Area and hopefully Civic Media helping out as well, we can get this information out.
Absolutely. I think having robust, independent, and nonprofit media in particular is a really essential part of a healthy democracy, frankly.
Yeah, though I could not agree more. So the headline on this story, How AI is Harming Wisconsin's Path to Renewable Energy. Tell us, first of all, how you came to write this story. Is this a passion of yours, or what made you say, hey, there's something here to report?
Oh, good question. Yeah, I do really care about the environment because, as other smarter people have said, hey, that's where I live. So anything that impacts it is important to me. And the intersection with you know, all these companies, utilities have these very important renewable energy goals, net zero goals, things like that, as we're facing down this very serious climate crisis. We're already seeing impacts of it. We're breathing in smoke from out of control wildfires right now. All of it is very connected. And they're walking back these goals now because there's this huge push to build these gigantic data centers. And the data centers are largely being driven by the enormous amount of energy consumption that is the result of this huge boom and push for, and I'm going to use scare quotes, AI, which is essentially a nebulous term for a bunch of marketing propaganda and not a single coherent technology.
People, regular listeners of the show, know that I'm petrified. I'm going to end my life by being attacked by an AI robotic dog. They scare the crap out of me. But more seriously, I guess for goofballs like me, or who might not be up to speed on technology, there is a really serious side to AI because it learns from itself and it gathers data, and all of that can either kind of be used for good or not so good, is my understanding.
Well, here's where it gets complicated. So again, learning from much smarter people than I am, I'm going to shout out a book that just came out called The AI Con by Alex Hanna and Emily M. Bender. Is a really great, very approachable, it's funny and it's smart and it's not overly academic. Look at all of the hype around AI and very clearly defines like what it is, what it is not. And so much of what we're hearing is not true about what it can do. And there's this really concerted push and propaganda marketing to make people think that it's smarter and more human-like than it is. I mean, anything that has, you know, quote unquote language, we are prone to thinking of, well, that's got to be some human quality to it, or it's going to take over. It's going to be Terminator 2, or it's going to be HAL 9000 or anything like that. Right. And what they point out, and I really appreciate it, is they call them doomers and boosters. So people who think, you know, AI is so, it's going to get so complex and so smart that it's going to destroy us, or people who think that, you know, that's not going to happen. It's going to save us. It's going to do all these things. And the doomers and the boosters are essentially the same side of two sides of the same coin, excuse me, where it's like they're both still claiming incorrect things about what AI can and can't do. It's a lot of it is just marketing flim flam. Like it is a spicy autocorrect. It is stochastic parrots is one of the things they call it. It's not actually performing a lot of what we want it to do. And it's really essential that we ask, like, what are the inputs? What are the outputs? What is the purpose of this thing? Is it saving us time in the end? Is it actually doing what we want it to do? Is it just offshoring jobs to people who are being paid a lot less to work behind the scene in these ghost jobs to actually run what it's doing? And also the fact that, back to the point of this column and the reason I wrote it, is it takes up a ton of energy to run these data centers that power these tools like ChatGPT and Copilot and all these other things. So Microsoft, for instance, is planning to build this huge data center in Wisconsin. And in order to power that data center, We Energies was like, well, shoot, we need more power. We need bigger plants. So as they're getting ready to shutter some of these coal power plants, they want to build these natural gas plants, which, yes, technically pollute a little bit less than coal plants do, but they aren't in line with the renewable energy goals that we've set that are so crucial to save ourselves from the actual threat of climate change.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking with Emily Mills, who is an independent journalist and writing for the Recombobulation area. This very intriguing story on how AI is harming Wisconsin's path to renewable energy. So specifically in your reporting, what did you find? Is it that the power used to create these data centers, or is it something independent where AI is going to suss out weather forecasting or something like that?
I wish. It's a data aggregator, and it requires existing information from human beings to do its job. And oftentimes it's stealing that information without abiding by copyright or intellectual property laws. But you still need human beings to actually, you know, gather and interpret this data and to use it in a way that's effective and important. And, you know, if you can't just rely on AI to do it all, it makes so many mistakes. It makes things up. And we're seeing the impacts now. I know the National Weather Service, you know, faced a bunch of cuts under DOGE. And there was a forecaster in Florida the other day who said, look, I'm not going to be able to tell you much about the hurricane season because these massive cuts to the jobs and the funding for these essential roles. AI can't replace that.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to sell it that it can. And so, of course, you know, these corporate leaders who want to save a ton of money and lay off a bunch of people and just like have some computers doing it are like, great, let's do that. But in the end, it doesn't actually work. Yeah. And we have a lot of proof that it doesn't work. And a lot of people pay the price for that in the end. So we need good forecasting, among many other things.
Years I've had a lot of people know I have a mutt resume, as I call it. About 8-9 years ago, I was between jobs. I drove Uber for about a year. I think everybody should do that. I think it's very, very interesting. But I picked up a guy on the far west side of Madison in a beautiful, beautiful palatial home, a hideaway. Like, he was coming downtown and we just got talking, and he was very talkative. It was fine. The long and the short of it is he made all this money because he worked at, it was 8 years ago, in AI technology and computer and forecasting. And he was getting paid from major insurance companies, because what they wanted to know is, where with climate change, which they acknowledged, where are the storms going to go so that we don't sign people up for insurance?
Yeah. I mean, if you live in the Gulf Coast and in parts of Florida, it's already getting almost impossible to get flood insurance, hurricane insurance, things like that. Places that have been really struck by wildfires out west, it's like impossible to get fire insurance because, yeah, it's too expensive for them in their business model to insure you.
It really is. So back to your story here. You bring up some of the PSC, let's define that, Public Service Commission, and what their role in this.
So yeah, the Public Service Commission, Wisconsin entity that had to recently voted to approve these two new power plants that We Energies wants to put in. It's their job to sort of review these applications and see if they're in line with whatever state policy is, and also to take public input. And for both of the power plants, one in Kenosha County, one in Milwaukee County, there was 94 and 95% opposition to those plants registered with the PSC. And that's between, you know, residents in the community, it's organizations that have banded together to kind of create a coalition to oppose it. It's also some businesses. It's a wide variety of people who registered opposition. Despite that overwhelming opposition, the PSC still approved those two plants to go in.
Now, help me out here, because I used to work at the Capitol, but I've lost track. Is the PSC still dominated or controlled by Walker appointees, or has time elapsed enough where there's an equal number, or is it Evers employees, do you know? Not employees, appointees.
Probably. I'm going to have to say I don't know. I'm not actually sure. I'd have to get up to date on that myself, but yeah, that is always a consideration.
I'm always intrigued by this, and I think a lot of people from the outside think, oh, it always comes down to Republican versus Democrat.
Right. I don't think that's the case here. I don't think it is. I think this issue in particular is complex, and I want to give a little bit of grace to people who are dealing with something that is really tricky. We do need power. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the political leanings or makeup of the current PSC is. I'd have to look into that. And I haven't seen a lot of explanation for the decision yet. I'm just sort of reacting to this initial, like, hey, why do we do this? But I think it's an interesting question. And I also think the broader question of, this is a really complex issue. It's not a Democrats versus Republican thing. It is like, we do need energy to power our homes and our businesses. But the thing is, in my many lives that I live, I get to see that the solutions exist. We do have the technology to do renewables and to really scale them up and to do it in a thoughtful way that takes into consideration, you know, viable farmland and conservation and everything else, but still have enough to power what we need. What I'm seeing is that we don't need gigantic data centers to power AI that is doing us net harm, in my opinion.
I'm fascinated by your reporting on this, the fact there was so much local opposition, and yet the Public Service Commission, which is supposed to serve the people of Wisconsin, still passes it unanimously. I mean, I saw this stuff. I was in the Capitol yet when Scott Walker was governor, and you know, my former party was big on local control all the time. Local control. Right. I don't recall a bigger ignoring of local control than under the Walker administration when it came to things like high capacity wells or rewriting mining legislation in northern Wisconsin,
right.
Fracking. And now here we seem to be seeing this again when it comes to energy in Wisconsin. So, all right, we'll come on back, talk a little bit more with Emily Mills, independent journalist. A great story here for the recombobulation area on AI and the Wisconsin environment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Thanks for sticking around with us on the Best of the Todd Albaugh Show. Here's the rest of Todd's conversation with independent journalist Emily Mills.
Welcome back to the Tom Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 23 minutes now past the hour of 3 o'clock. Glad to have you along, Zombers. Very dramatic on the bumper music
there. Well, yeah. I know we said that AI is not like Terminator 2 or HAL 9000, but I couldn't resist
I caught the reference. I like that. I like it.
He's always listening. He's always on top of it.
Yeah, it was nice.
Appreciate that, Zombers. Along here beside me at the world headquarters at the desk is Emily Mills and is with Recombobulation Area. They are a independent journalist here, and you're writing now. You've written for other places, like you say, Journal Sentinel, other places along the way. But now here, feel a bit more freedom working for the Recombobulation Area versus other places you've worked or not?
Actually, I have been really fortunate in my career to have very rarely run into issues of kind of censorship being reined in. Even when I was at the Journal Sentinel, the editor there was like, write about whatever you want to write about.
That's great.
I don't think it was ever reined in. I mean, I do try to be thoughtful, at least. I'm not just popping off about random things. But it is really nice to have the platform regardless, though, because I can't help myself. I have opinions about things, but I also really like to do a lot of research to make sure I'm not talking out of my rear. Yeah. So I really appreciate the platform.
I ask it because, again, in our discussions on this show and other shows at Civic Media, I think oftentimes there's this perception out there that, oh my gosh, you know, everybody is being told what to do by editors or publishers or whatever. I do think that in Wisconsin, at least, you tell me if you think I'm wrong, you're much more of a journalist than I am, but I think in Wisconsin, there's less of that when it comes to places like our state newspapers, and that sort of thing. Am I wrong?
I think it's probably more nuanced. So if I have never actually been just a regular beat reporter, news reporter, and I think there are a lot of more, there's that constant debate about, do you present both sides of everything?
Yeah.
Well, what if one of the sides is actually just
a lie,
or harmful. But yeah, I think I have never actually held a job as a journalist that was that kind. And I know people a lot of wonderful reporters who've worked in those fields and currently work in those fields for public radio, for some of the newspapers. And there is a lot more that you have to be considering as you do it. Mm. And there is a little bit more, I wouldn't say censorship, but a lot pickier editing and what will get picked up and what won't. That's also just because they're woefully underfunded and understaffed these days. Yeah. You've got one person trying to do a million things at any given newspaper now. So that's never know what the editor is going to want you to do or not.
Didn't mean to go off on a tangent. But
I
like it when we have journalists here just to ask, because I think it's good for our audience to hear from people who actually worked in the field and interact.
So it is an important conversation.
It really is. Emily wrote this fantastic piece that Recombobulation Area entitled How AI is Harming Wisconsin's Path to Renewable Energies. Have a question here for you, Emily, if I get back to it here. Says, Lori, listening all the way up in beautiful Hayward, Wisconsin.
I love Hayward.
Yeah, absolutely. At WBZH, Buzz of the North. Says, Todd, can you ask Emily if they have heard anything about the state in the South that has a lot of issues with huge green...
In their state is what it was supposed to say because of AI centers built there from Lori and Hayward.
Well, this ties in because we were talking over the break, whether it's quote-unquote mining Bitcoin, where they put up these great big, huge... What do you call them? Energy generators? I don't know.
It's the big data servers. Yeah. Yeah, the data mining centers, require... a lot of energy.
Compare that to what's happening potentially with what the PSC just passed here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and sort of to the point too that there's other states that are dealing with the same issues. So as far when I was researching this, the numbers right now, it's a little tricky because these large corporations that are building data centers to support AI tools and things like that aren't being very transparent about how much energy is actually going into it. Like they're not giving any reports. They used to, but they've sort of conveniently stopped doing that in recent years. But a lot of the best estimates and just sort of looking at what's happening and adding that up is data centers and the energy that's going toward powering these quote unquote AI tools is about to outpace how much energy consumption it takes to do Bitcoin mining, which is quite a lot. Yeah. So we're talking, you know, orders of magnitude, like enough power for multiple small countries basically to power themselves that are going into these data centers for these technologies.
And I think what's important, you correct me if I'm wrong, and for Wisconsinites, and maybe this is why people are so opposed to it, the PSC, these are not like quiet little things. They have this annoying buzz in some of these things that can really just drive humans and wildlife, whatever, crazy.
Yeah, there's the noise factor, and there's also just the air pollution factor. Right. These are you know, they call them natural gas, but we're talking about like methane and things like that. And there are controls in place to kind of knock down how much pollution is going out, but they're not without pollution. And there's a lot of precedent for these plants being, you know, problematic, especially for their neighbors breathing in the air. And I think an interesting case is where, you know, We Energies will probably have to follow the law in Wisconsin, at least when they build these places, so better than not. But I think the larger issue is that, you know, a good example is in Tennessee. Elon Musk's ex-AI built a giant data center in a historically black neighborhood outside of Memphis, I want to say, and didn't apply for any clean air permits, didn't apply for any permits for their generators. And because the local utilities are not able to provide enough power to run this place, but Elon really wanted to get it up and running to meet some arbitrary deadline to roll out whatever his AI chatbot thing is.
Wow.
They installed a whole bunch of these methane generators just like running 24/7, and they're just dumping pollution into the air around this place in a neighborhood that has already historically high visits to the emergency center for asthma. You know, they're saying like, I can't breathe. I can't go outside and breathe because it's just gas. It's just the smell of gas everywhere. So this is the kind of thing that's happening in service of this technology.
And what we know based on our healthcare system in America, chances are that people in that neighborhood that might be people of color, probably less likely to have great healthcare coverage.
Yep. Or, you know, great access to medical care generally, or the incomes for it. I think the median income in that particular neighborhood was about $25,000 a year. So not great.
Less than a minute. It's been great. What can people do to fight back across Wisconsin on this?
Well, I'd like to say you could write into the Public Service Commission.
But as it turns out.
I mean, obviously, I think it is important to keep calling your representatives and asking questions and telling them what you're concerned about and telling what you're opposed to. Calling makes a difference.
Yes.
Do the research. Make calls. Talk to your friends.
You can find the story at www.therecombobulationarea.news. Emily Mills, thanks so much. Come back soon.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Up next, Todd's conversation from Friday with Brady Ewing. Stick around on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I see you standing there on that lawn. Discount shades, store-bought tan, flip-flops and cut-off jeans.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show.
Thanks for sticking around for the best of the Todd Allball Show. Here is Todd's conversation from Friday with Brady Ewing.
GIF, June 6, 2025. It is D-Day. Todd ran that right up to the very end, but we got it in. If you weren't with this, you could listen to it on the podcast or however. Andy Rooney, iconic voice at CBS and 60 Minutes for so very, very many years, who was at D-Day, who served. And I just think it's appropriate that we pause and reflect and remember that today and never forget. Steve, listening to Mount Horeb on WMDX, says, I am an Army veteran. And that was a great segment about D-Day. They gave the ultimate sacrifice for freedom. Absolutely. So important that we pause, reflect, and remember that. And always somebody I like to go down memory road with, our friend. He's a three-time Big Ten champion with Wisconsin football. Spent 3 years in the NFL and an all-around great guy and a fantastic turkey hunter as well. Mr. Brady Ewing joins us from the old hometown of the RC. Brady, how are you?
Doing good. That maybe the turkey hunter. That's my real claim to fame, I think.
Champion turkey hunter. but they don't give you a ring for that, right?
They don't. But what I'm hopeful, the people that are watching online and the ones that were listening on the radio really missed a display between the commercial break there where you were doing some kickboxing, some punching on the air. Well, showing your moves over there in the studio.
Well, Brady asked me what I was doing this weekend, and so I'm going to the Brewer game on Sunday. As I said at the top of the show, and by the way, once again, the game is going to be shown on the Roku Sports Channel. And stay tuned after the game because they're going to do a free showing of just a bit outside the story of the 1982 nice. Milwaukee Brewers. So watch the Brewers game, listen on the radio, turn down the volume on the Roku channel, listen to the Brewers Radio Network on select stations on Civic Media, and then stick around the Roku Sports Channel for just a bit outside afterwards. But so I'm going to the game with my buddy Rob Daggett, his lovely wife, and their young daughter, and we're going down. And Rob used to be one of my trainers back in the day, and when I used to have a personal trainer, and we did the not legit boxing, but where they'd wrap my hands and Rob would have like oversized mitts and they call out numbers 1 through 6. And you had to, you know, you're doing footwork and you're punching. You do that two minute rounds, three of those with a minute or two in between, you're exhausted.
Oh, no doubt. Actually, at the University of Wisconsin, our strength coach, Coach Herbert and Brian Bott, we wouldn't get wrapped up. So it wasn't as serious as you, Todd, but we just used our hands and worked with those mitts. So we'd partner up and work on quick hands, different sequences, which from a football perspective, it was good conditioning, but also a way just to train your mind-hand coordination. And having quick hands as you're either fighting off a block or you're trying to establish your hands on a block when you're blocking a defender.
Oh, yeah.
Great training.
It really is. It was the best workout of my life. So Rob and I have kept in contact. And so we got to figure out a date to take you and Rachel and the boys down to another Brewer game. But I like to do something nice. And so Rob, we're taking his daughter down there and we'll have a good time on Sunday. Brady, I wanted to talk a little bit about character today. Something I know you and I have talked about before, but what brought it up was Jonathan Blackwell, one of the big standout players for Greg Gard's team at University of Wisconsin men's basketball team, put his name in to explore the NBA and said when he did so, if I decide not to go into the NBA draft, I'm coming back to Wisconsin. And some people kind of thought, well, yeah, sure, right, whatever. This last week, he did just that. He said, I tested the waters, had a lot of great workout and input, but I'm going to wait a year, and I'm coming back to Wisconsin. And I read an article, I think it was Badger Blitz. I credited it, but I just don't have it in front of me right now. And in the story, it said that Jonathan Blackwell, somebody in his circle, heard from one of the other big teams out there. And they said to Jonathan Blackwell's people, you know, we're really disappointed that Jonathan didn't go into the transfer portal. And I guess Blackwell's response was, hey, you can tell them that we were really disappointed that you didn't recruit me out of high school. And I thought that was great.
I love that. And I think that's when I think of, I guess, college sports of old, that's what it was all about, right? You're recruiting kids out of high school. They have that in that character, that integrity, especially at a place like Wisconsin. I feel like we've always tried to hang our hat on recruiting young athletes like that. And so to hear him say that, to hear you tell that story during the break, and then here now again, it gives me goosebumps actually, because it just makes you feel like there's still hope a little bit. And
it really is.
And Blackwell, I mean, great player, but I think a better leader. And I think that story is a testament to the type of person he is.
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's, Greg Gard a couple of years ago when the NIL really ginned up, he said to the press, look, I got to kind of start dividing myself from the old school of, look, these guys are like our sons and we bring them up. It's becoming a business. But I think this just proves there's still a part of the old school and Greg Gard. The fact that he's bringing back Blackwell, Winter is coming back, Janicki, three guys that probably could have gotten bigger NIL deals elsewhere, but they're coming back to the Badgers.
Yeah, I think that it speaks to the way that Greg Gard's been able to adjust his approach, but yet still keep some of what Wisconsin and makes him special. And he's been able to evolve both on the court and off the court in recruiting. And you look at what they did this past year and some of those key players coming back, I think high expectations, but of those top tier programs like Wisconsin has shown to be, I feel like that is the expectation now in the transfer portal. So to have that consistency is going to be huge. And it's only going to snowball in my mind because the more you can keep some of those core parts of your team together and not have that large amount of turnover to the transfer portal due to whatever reason that may be, I think that's going to just differentiate you that much more as the years progress to where you have that culture, you have that team built, and people, there's still going to be athletes like Blackwell and others that want to be a part of that type of a program versus this very transitional type of a program.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect to Chucky Hepburn, who went to Louisville. But right. I think if you would look at the seasons of Hepburn at Louisville last year after leaving for a reported $1 million deal at Louisville, and John Tonji, who transferred in, and you look at where they're at now positioned in the draft, I think that Tonji got the better year.
Yeah, 100%. And money, money's awesome. Money's great, right? I mean, Chucky chasing that deal at Nebraska, good for him. Yeah. Like, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, I'm sure there was days he was sitting there looking on his phone or watching on TV, seeing how the Badgers did and the camaraderie they had out on the court.
Yeah.
And you have to believe that he missed that a little bit. I have no idea. Total speculation, but it's like, man.
But you played in Division One on the football side. But so you know what it's like to be on a team. Talk to us a little bit about that. If you'd like to have Brady speak to your young people, whether it's a sports group or otherwise, you can reach him on the socials, as they say, particularly on Instagram. It's Brady, B-R-A-D-I-E, Ewing. And you can reach him there. It's B-Ewing34, right? That's your handle or your whatever you want to call it?
On X, B-Ewing34, and then Instagram, Brady.Ewing. Yep.
All right. Very good. Because talk to when you go around talking to youth, and you talk about character, you know, the old adage, character is what you do when people aren't looking. When you're following behind someone and they drop their wallet and no one's around, do you put it in your pocket or do you catch up with the person and say, hey, you dropped this? And to me, high school athletics, regardless of the person's ability, those are lessons, if you have the right coach, the right team, those are lessons we can learn.
100%. Yeah, it's super cliche, but athletics gives you a great way to expose people to different types of situations. That could be success. That could be failure. That could be, sitting behind somebody that's better than them. That could be being the star person on the team. And I think those situations are great microcosms for life in the fact that, when you get into the working world or just even life as a student athlete in high school or in a family setting, like adversity is going to come. Like we all face adversity of some sort. So to have experiences with how to navigate that, how to come together as a team, how to use your resources of your family or your teammates, how to respond when bad things happen. You know, so you get injured, you miss a game-winning shot. Like, how are you going to bounce back? Are you going to go sulk in the corner of the locker room, or are you going to come back the next day, show up a little bit early, get the extra shots up, and try to learn from those challenges or those mistakes? And I think, you know, we all have times where we do that. We all have times where we revert to feeling sorry for ourselves. So yeah. I think at least being mindful of that and having accountability not only to yourself but also those around you, that's what makes teams special, because everybody's going to fall. Everybody's going to stumble. It's really, how are you going to try to motivate yourself to get out of that? And then how are you going to help your teammates when they're in that position? Because everybody goes through those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think, like, I've never met John Blackwell, but just the little I read and see, and I guess I'm a big believer in people's actions over their words. And here's a guy who said he was going to do something, probably most likely had the opportunity to cash in bigger somewhere else, but he kept his word and is coming back out of loyalty. And that's something in my life that's tremendously important to me, is I really try to be a loyal friend. I try to be loyal to the people who take care of me. And so, you know, I just really admire what Blackwell's doing, as others on the team as well.
Yeah, it's special. Blackwell, we know what he can do on the court, but to see that he lives that out in his day-to-day basis is pretty special.
Yeah, it really is. We're talking to Brady Ewing, three-time Big Ten champion with Wisconsin football, spent 3 years in the NFL, and a Brewers fan as well. And by the way, Brady, you can actually, you're eligible. get your kids Rachel texting in right now. We are right smack dab in the middle of our big Sconny Summer Text Win contest. You can be eligible. You're eligible for the next, about 14 minutes here. Go to the Civic Media app, download it, open it up, and text the word North, N-O-R-T-H, North, right now on the Civic Media app, because we're giving away this hour a pair, that's two, a deuce, to a future Brewer game at AmFam Field in these beautiful club seats that, Brady, you've been in. It's a pretty good view.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, you get to go inside, hit the air conditioning if you need it. Great. Concession stand closed. Yeah, we needed it the day we went. Concession stands were closed. Yeah. That was needed for the kids too, to keep them cooled down and fueled up. So no, it was a great game. It's always fun to be at, I still want to call it Miller Park.
AmFam Field. I know.
Taking in the Brewers.
Text the word North, N-O-R-T-H, North. Text it right now to be eligible for the Brewer tickets. And also eligible for here, Brady, you want to take your lovely wife on a vacation? Two grand prizes, Wisconsin vacation to either the Baraboo Dells area or a Door County getaway with a gas card. So North, N-O-R-T-H. About a minute here left, Brady. Let's dive into this. We'll pick it up on the other side. A-Rod, Aaron Rodgers. Now, this is interesting because you played with Russell Wilson at Wisconsin. The 1 year he was there, you guys went to the Rose Bowl and won the Big Ten. And so now Russell Wilson's going from the Steelers to the Jets and A-Rod going from the Jets to the Steelers.
Giants. Russell's at
Giants. Same stadium.
The other New York
same
team.
Stadium. Same stadium.
Same stadium. There you go.
It'll be – all right, see, I messed up the segment because I didn't know my teams. You never try to challenge a former NFL player when you're talking about teams. That's the lesson from the end of this segment. All right, I'll regroup. We'll come back. We'll get Brady's thoughts on Aaron Rodgers. And his son is an NBA fan. The Pacers game last night was incredible. It's the Almost Joe for a Friday with Brady Ewing on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
When I think about you, I think about 17. I think about my old Jeep. I think about the stars in the sky. Funny how a melody sounds like a memory, like a soundtrack to a July Saturday.
Not quite July, but...
Thanks for sticking with us on the best of the Todd Allbaugh Show for this week. Right here, we're going to listen to the rest of Todd's conversation with Brady Ewing that he had on Friday. Enjoy.
Brady Ewing, three-time Big Ten champion, Wisconsin Badger football team, also a former player in the league, as they say, the NFL, joins us every other Friday. Always appreciative of that. By the way, Brady, it is National Donut Day.
Ooh.
So I'm trying to...
Did you partake?
Look at this. Luke Mathers brought in a box of Greenbush Bakery donuts today.
Yep, I had one earlier too.
Right?
Oh man!
Did you spend a lot of time? Did you spend a lot of time there when you went to Wisconsin?
Love Greenbush. Even after when we lived in Madison, that would when our kids were younger, that would be a Saturday morning tradition. And I don't know. Is it Papa John's? Was the original center?
Papa's Donuts. Yeah, Papa's Donuts.
Papa's Donuts, Spudnuts, man.
Before that.
Hey, that was the spot. I missed those and craved those.
I know, absolutely. Me too. Good times. So Brady and I could sit around talking about donuts and Richland Center for all day. But text the word North, N-O-R-T-H, right now to the Civic Media app to be eligible to win a pair of Milwaukee Brewers tickets as well as fabulous grand prizes, which will whisk you away to destinations untold across Wisconsin. North, N-O-R-T-H, is the word to text right now. Brady, before the break, Aaron Rodgers, former Packer, former Jet, now to the Steelers. I know it's sensational, but what do you make of it?
It's fascinating. I'm interested to see how him and Tomlin kind of mesh together and their personalities and, what we've seen from Aaron Rodgers through the years as far as his personality and just there's some baggage that comes there. I mean, he can play on the field, but comes with, some off the field stuff and, just a pretty extravagant personality. So it's going to be interesting to see how he meshes in yet another program. And, I have a ton of respect for the way that the Steelers program has been run and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, that's where I think coaches can really come into the equation to see how they mesh that type of a talent, that type of personality with the culture that they've built historically and going to be very, very different than I think the Russell personality that they had had in at least last year.
Very, very different indeed. Very different indeed. Brady, you were bringing up during the break, this is a really interesting point. Talk to us about what these quarterbacks that were in the NFL draft, these college quarterbacks, some of them coming out early, and what they left and what they're going towards.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting, and I almost brought it up during the Blackwell conversation. Just you look at the draft, and everybody obviously saw Shedeur Sanders and how he dropped in the draft, but there was other higher quarterback draft picks, and that position's easy to call out just because everybody recognizes them. And it was still interesting that a lot of these quarterbacks that declared early and could have stayed in college gave up big NIL deals in college to pursue what would be a smaller annual salary at the NFL level. But, I guess I just think back to guys I played with in some of my time, and guys are still chasing that dream. And they still have, again, money is important. Obviously, they'll make great money either way, but they're still out pursuing that dream and wanting to be a part of something that they've likely looked forward to since they were, kids. So it's just interesting to see how that money, goal achievement, can go back and forth and weigh on people and how they make their decisions. And people want to be a part of something bigger than themselves, their goals, their dreams. And, or maybe it's a certain program like Blackwell where he wants to be a part of Wisconsin and uphold his word. So just interesting how that plays into it.
It's super interesting. I think I read where Shedeur, he was making well over $1.5 million in NIL at Colorado. And, he dropped to the fifth round. I know the minimum has changed a lot because you were in the fifth round, right?
Correct.
It's changed a lot in the years since you were first drafted. But you got to believe that Shedeur is making a lot less. He went to Cleveland, right? As an NFL quarterback, a fifth rounder, that he was making as the starter at Colorado.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But again, he wants to be a part of competition at its highest level. Mm-hmm. And no doubt he had more he could have accomplished at Colorado, other than getting his name inducted or his number inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think that already happened.
I know. They retired his jersey number when he's still a senior. Or whatever, last year playing. Crazy.
Isn't there usually a time window that you need to uphold to get that done?
Right? I thought. And by, as long as you brought that up, why is 34 not retired at Camp Randall? That's my... come on.
Hey, on a side note, though, did you see the recent Hall of Fame class? It's at Wisconsin for the W Club Hall of Fame. It'd help if I was able to talk. But James White is going in, Travis Frederick, and a bunch of others. Frank Kaminsky.
Yep.
Just really cool to see, I guess, people that I either played with or, looked up to during, my high school days getting inducted. Now that's really cool and happy for those guys.
It's super cool. And congratulations to all who were inducted. Very quickly, Brady, NBA finals are on. The Pacers against the Thunder, Oklahoma. Halliburton, the Wisconsin guy, does it again for the Pacers in the last second.
Yeah, it was pretty special. You said Bennett's an NBA guy. Rachel was out at her parents with a couple of our boys last night. So Bennett and I watched the first half. And what started off as a pretty lopsided game became pretty competitive to the end. So I got to catch the highlights from the second half. But, man, that guy has ice water running through his veins. And just an impressive athlete. To make a shot of that caliber in that game with all of the hype, And it's kind of old hat for him. He does it all the time now.
Why is it that Wisconsin teams always lose to the eventual champion?
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as Todd always says, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you on Monday.
And your day will come. Keep banging on your drum.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.